What's in a name?
It's often the first thing you find out about a person. It can be a link to the person's heritage and identity. And it can also be that constant reminder of otherness. That's Jean Guerrero's story. You might know her name because of her reporting over the years from the U.S.-Mexico border. She's written a couple of books, and she's currently an opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times. And she recently wrote a column titled, "For Years I Anglicized My Mexican Last Name. MAGA Trolls inspired me to reclaim it." And Jean Guerrero is with us now to tell us more. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about why you chose to anglicize the pronunciation of your last name to begin with.
Well, so it started, when I was a kid. I grew up in San Diego on the border with Tijuana, with a Mexican dad and a Puerto Rican mom. Spanish was my first language. But I went to a private Episcopalian elementary school where it was against the rules to speak Spanish. You know, the teachers referred to me as Jean Guerrero. And if we were caught speaking Spanish, we had to stay in detention and we had to write, "I will not speak Spanish. I will not speak Spanish," 100 times. This was during a period of intense anti-Mexican and anti-immigrant hate in California. I wanted to please the teachers. I knew how much my mom was sacrificing for me to go to that school. She at that point, my parents had split up and she was a single mom. So it was a struggle for her. And I wanted to do well in school. And so I internalized, the teacher's disdain for Spanish. I internalized this idea of my language, my parents' language, as being delinquent. And I mostly renounced Spanish, and I adopted that identity as Jean Guerrero.
I have to tell you that when I read your piece, I was shocked by that. I mean, I'd heard of it, in say the 40s and the 50s, Spanish being discouraged, many languages other than English discouraged. But to find out that people were punishing you for speaking Spanish, I found that incredible. I mean, I feel like being multilingual is an asset. Did your mother know that they had such a negative view of her first language?
She did. And the thing is that she came from Puerto Rico, where they also have, this English language supremacy, like decades of U.S. colonial policies that cast English as a superior language. This was a school where a majority of the kids were Mexican-American or children of immigrants. And they the mostly white teachers, they wanted us to learn English as quickly as possible. So the parents at the time thought that this was a good thing, that it would result in us, being bilingual and knowing English faster. But what happened is this ended up in many cases supplanting our native language. This internalized English language supremacy, what it did was it created a real, this almost self-hatred, where I didn't understand what had happened until many years later when I was reading the Mexican author Reina Grande, who writes about subtractive bilingualism and how, this practice of forcing children to stop speaking their native language and to see it as something bad also causes children to internalize this disdain, the dominant white culture's disdain for their own culture and their own selves. And for me, what that did is it created a lot of self-destructive behavior, where I was, cutting my wrists as a teenager. I was, binge drinking, drug abuse, a lot of self-destructive behavior. And then also, my mother, when she would make mistakes in English, I would correct her, and I would say really, monstrous things like "learn English." And this is something that, I look back on with an immense amount of pain. And it wasn't something that I was able to fully confront until I saw Reina Grande talking about this, internalizing this disdain for her mother.
So how far along were you in your career when you realized that being bilingual or having multiple language skills was an asset and not a liability?
Yeah. So a major turning point for me was in high school when I came across Luis Alberto Urrea's book, The Devil's Highway, about a group of Mexican men who die trying to cross the militarized border. That book has a lot of Spanglish in it. And it was the first time that I realized that the voices of people like my mother and people like my father could be made into art. And that book inspired me to pursue a career as a journalist in Mexico, which is the first time that I began to refer to myself as Jean Guerrero, for the first time since I was a kid. But when I came back to the U.S., you know, I started my career as in public radio. And I remember asking myself when I was signing off of stories, like, do I want to refer to myself as Jean Guerrero or as Jean Guerrero? And ultimately, I chose the anglicized version because there was some feeling in me that I was going to be judged by my mostly white managers as trying to be provocative or something if I claimed Jean Guerrero. So I reverted to this anglicized pronunciation and didn't think much about how I was pronouncing my name for many years as I was, you know, covering the impact of the Trump administration's immigration policies, covering white nationalism, the rise of white nationalism. I wrote a book about Stephen Miller, Trump's senior advisor. But then I began to receive a lot of hate mail that was directed at me based on my family, based on my background, you know, people sending me racial slurs about my Mexicanness, people telling me that I should be deported, really ugly stuff that was rooted in my identity as a Mexican and Puerto Rican woman. And that, for me, was a huge turning point where I decided, you know, I want to say my name correctly now. I want these people snarling at me to, you know, shrivel at the sound of my name, Jean Guerrero. Like, that is who I am, and I want to show that I'm proud of it.
As you just referenced, you wrote a book about Stephen Miller, a former Trump aide, a top Trump aide, who has been described as the architect of some of the former president's immigration policies, which many consider racist. And was it the book, that the appearance of the book, that started the trolling?
Yeah. I mean, I had received some hatred before, but it was nothing compared to what came after my book about Stephen Miller was published, where people were sending me racial slurs, telling me that I should be deported to Mexico, very much attacking my family and like where I come from. And so that is what made me all of a sudden want to say my name correctly here in the United States.
That's interesting, because I think some people might have gone the other way. They might have thought, well, you know what, I don't need the hassle. But you decided, you went the other way. I mean, can you talk a little bit more about what that feels like to reclaim your name?
It's such a good question, because there is like a very strong feeling that's attached to saying my name the way that it's meant to be said. You know, like, I feel embodied. I feel like deeply rooted in my ancestors, in my mother's sacrifices for me, my abuelita, my grandmother. You know, I feel them inside of me. Like, I feel different when I say my name.
Can I ask you this, though? And I realize some people aren't going to like this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, that everyone has not had the opportunity to study more than one language. They might not have been exposed at a certain age. And also, people speak lots of languages in the United States or haven't had exposure to multiple languages. Do you have any sympathy for them?
100%. I mean, in my column, I write about how, you know, reclaiming one's names, and, you know, this isn't for everybody. Like, there's so much intergenerational trauma around potentially having lost access to your family's language, your family's customs. There's many valid and powerful ways to show pride in our cultures and in where we come from. I understand that not everybody can roll their R's, and not everyone is going to be able to say my name or everybody's name correctly. You know, like, putting in the effort, I think, is what matters the most. And I think that what needs to change is just this idea that we have of someone, you know, when somebody teaches us how to say their name, we shouldn't see it as a burden. I think we often do see it as a burden, but we should see it as a gift. Like, I think it's a beautiful gift to learn how to say somebody's name.
That was Jean Guerrero, journalist, author, and LA Times opinion columnist. Jean Guerrero, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
To hear more of Jean Guerrero's story and how other people handle the mispronunciation of their names, you can listen to today's episode of NPR's Consider This Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.